Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So tonight is the debate, which is framed in such ridiculous forms of news, so we try many other things. There are so many ways to participate in the fate of the world. So this hour we do Astro-Jungian pre-debate mythic news radio. We're awaiting our guest, but we have faith. We are about to welcome forensic clinical and cardiac psychologist Steve Parker. He has lived and worked in Alaska for more than 40 years and treasures living on the edge of the wilderness. The edge of the wilderness. Remember, as the dawn of everything reminds us, you know, communities have creative agency, and it's very often those who live on the edge of wilderness, you know, who contribute. He has traveled and worked throughout the state and has been director of four rural mental health centers. For 30 years, he worked as a forensic psychologist, seeing folks at the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital and Fairbanks Correctional Center. He and his partner, Cornelia, have run a bookstore specializing in Jungian books, Silver Tree Books, and a toy store specializing in Jungian sand play items, Happy Moose Toys. Oh, I want some of those. They have taught numerous Jungian seminars and helped start the C.G. Jung Society of Northern Alaska over 10 years ago. He is the webmaster at jungcurrents.com for many years. He's been dealing with heart issues for 20 years, including a severe heart attack 20 years ago. Out of that heart struggle, he has written a book and created a stone sanctuary. His website, which is under construction because everything has a Pluto transit, is drsteveparker.com. Welcome, Steve Parker.
Yes. Good afternoon, Carolyn.
Excellent. So I can't help myself but just to say that, you know, when you were born, we keep information stealthy so as not to be hoovered by the internet. But the image, the Sabian symbol for your midheaven overhead is in a cave overhung with twisted roots, a seeker pores over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. Does that amuse you?
Yes, I have a story about a cave.
Oh, good. I'll come right back to that. And it means the icy, the point straight down, is a prism, the power of dreams to unify collective attention. We go, that's great. Yeah, so wherever we want to go, but yeah, a story about a cave is good, and then we'll go to MLK and Gettysburg Address and Project 25 and everything. Okay, so cave?
Sure, you mentioned a heart struggle. So just in the context of, you know, this really is, I have a lot to say about mortality in the talk and the election. So my own sort of faith of mortality was 20-some years ago when I had severe angina symptoms at the local hospital misdiagnosed, Anchorage Hospital misdiagnosed. Anyway, a friend said, come to San Francisco immediately. So I did, and I had a stent. I had severe blockage in the left descending artery. Anyway, so it was a real serious encounter. I had about a 5% chance of surviving, but I did. So it scared the hell out of me. And so in response to that, this voice in me said, well, Steve, build a cave, because you know, wounded creatures like caves just crawl in. So that summer, I had a friend dig out a big hole in the backyard, and we built a 10 by 15 foot square cave out of stone. And so it was a wonderful sort of retreat and healing place. I mean, you sort of go down into this inner world, and it's very quiet. And this was 2001, 9/11, and I went into the local hardware store, and Tom at the counter, who knew me, this was just right after the 9/11 catastrophe, and he said, Steve, what are you going to do? Build a cave? Yeah. So I built it in anticipation of 9/11 and other catastrophes.
Yes. Right. Well, and then we'll get to your labyrinth work and your working with stone. But in the sense of you as a, you know, a prism seeing unity out of diversity, yeah, you'd sent Martin Luther King Jr.'s talk about dreams. Do you want to read that, or should I? You sent me the whole thing, or a lot of it.
Why don't you read the part the part that says the valley of we should not be in the valley of despair. We talked earlier. We were talking about, you know, we're going to talk about this debate as a dream, and I thought this would sort of help set the stage for, you know, what
right.
the dreams.
And the debate is a, yeah. Now that's great. The debate is our collective dream. And again, many ways to participate, many ways to participate. So yes, so from MLK, yes, come on in, all mentors. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair, I say to you today, my friends. So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It's a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. Yeah, we're going to weave a lot of these themes. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day, right down in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to transform, able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone. Oh, that's great. Let me do that again. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. We'll get to your stone working. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of kinship. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. Excellent. Right, and we love, you know, in your own chart, you know, yes, unity out of division and conjuring the unifying story. And however we want to watch the debate dream tonight, and however we might want to participate, but that takes us to your work with stone, right? Because you know, in our backstage conversation, you'd said that, you know, after the heart attack, severe heart attack, you felt to work with stone, not only making your cave, which is genius, right? Because one of the things that, you know, I follow you on Facebook, which is how we're connected, and I guess it's a quote from Jung: the cave we fear to enter is the cave that holds the treasure.
Yes, that's Joseph Campbell. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, Joseph Campbell. Right. No, he was. I studied a little with him, and everybody's complex. I was surprised, appalled, and then forgiving to discover that Joseph Campbell voted for Reagan. And it's like, oh, all right. Everybody's got their befoibments, but bless his heart anyway. You know, he got snookered.
I'd also note that in Alaska, the caves also have bears. So you know, the cave may hold the treasure you seek, but you better be careful too.
Right. Yes. Well, fear. Well, and you brought up with your heart attack and your recovery and your building the cave. You know, we say to all of us, let all fear and adversity serve as incentive for us to hone our skills and clarify our vetting standards. Right. So you did that. And then you began to work with stone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you started to make these labyrinths, which is why I first sort of been following your labyrinths for years, going, oh, they're so beautiful, they're so beautiful. I didn't know that it's sunken spiral labyrinth. It's a descent, and you said it's 6 feet down. You dug 6 feet
yeah.
down yourself? Wow.
No. I had a friend with a front loader help. For about 15 years, I worked essentially on the stone sanctuary, building eggs and walls and fountains and other things. And then about 5 years ago, when I was 70, I said, you know, no, I didn't say this. Boy said, Steve, why don't you build a labyrinth? Of course, I get these ideas in my head, and they're dangerous. And I said, sure. And so we had an area in the yard. It was going to be a pond, but moose get in their ponds and break them. So I thought, well, I'll build a labyrinth there. And it was so for the next 5 years now, I've been, you know, we dug this out. It was 50 feet wide and essentially 4 feet deep. So, but the 2 foot walls around it. So when you go to the bottom of the labyrinth, you're really 6 feet under, which I just get a kick out of because really it's all about mentality.
So shall we imagine that it is in your labyrinth 6 feet down that we want to watch the debate tonight?
That would be a nice, safe place. That's exactly it. I like that.
That's good.
In fact, maybe don't watch the debate. Just go there.
Just go there. Well, we will telepathically journey with you 6 feet down. That's so deep and witty, into the labyrinth, which is not a maze, right? We a maze gets you lost.
Right.
You know, labyrinth is a journey to one's deep self. Yeah, is that fair to say?
Yeah, this is a journey. It's the journey to the center. I didn't realize when I was building, of course, what I was doing. But, you know, from a Jungian view, it's also a mandala. So at the center of the labyrinth is the soul, is the spirit, the center, organizing center of the personality, the prism, perhaps, as you were mentioning. So, you know, it's very, it's also a place of, it's a magic circle. It's a place of safety.
So yes. And then when you'd brought that up, I said, but you know what Merlin teaches King Arthur, he says the primary lesson, future King Arthur, is, you know, work with stone, listen to the stones, and what the stones say is cohere, cohere, right? And then you said Merlin, and then you said about the stone, about Jung and his carving on the stone at Bullingen, so I toss it to you on that.
Yeah, stones are very eloquent. They're very slow in speaking. It can take 1,000 years to understand them, but they're very eloquent. So when Jung was building his place in Bollingen, the quarry people brought him a square stone, which he not ordered. He ordered a triangular stone, and the mason said, "Well, we'll take it back. We're sorry." And Jung says, "No, that is my stone. I must have it." So he keeps this stone around for 20 years. He turns 75, and you know it's a cubic stone. It's, you know, it's 20 inches on each side. And he starts carving on the stone for his 75th birthday. And so perhaps the most important one that most people may see is there's a sort of homunculus in a circle that looks like an eye that has, you know, some writing on it. And what it essentially said, you know, another person who talked to him, Maud Oakes, who was an anthropologist, he told her, he said, "I need not have written anything. It's all there on the stone." So here's the guy who wrote, you know, collected works, 17 collected works, but he said, "I put it all there on the stone." So clearly the message is that what's on that stone, or perhaps not on that stone, is what's really important psychologically. And this verse was about the stone that the builders refused, because, you know, they said the Christian myth too, and many, many myths. So, you know, the verse is that the stone that the builders refused has become the cornerstone. So the idea that Jung really, you know, this is what the shadow is, and we can talk about it. The rejected parts of the personality are where the gold is, are where the heart is. And so this is a stone that the builders refused, in fact, is the saving grace for us.
Right. And then you said,
he carved, right, he didn't carve one side of the stone. And in Memories, Dreams, and Reflection, he says, "You know what I wanted to carve on that side of the stone? Because the cry of Merlin. You know, who is, you know, that who we no longer hear."
Until now, perhaps tonight. Right. And then you said that the last image that he did carve was Merlin. And let's remember that the Arthurian legends and the, you know, we have endogenous receptors for cannabis and DMT, we have endogenous receptors for myth and the myth of the round table. The Grail legend is about the experiment to have spiritually cultivated people engaged in governance. But what passes for the end, myths don't really end, they get put on pause, and we want to hit play, especially tonight, So all the really cool people go away. Merlin goes off with the nymph, and Arthur goes off to take yoga classes with the priestesses in Avalon to await the world's call at a time of danger when we need positive yang leadership to dance with positive yin. We go, now would be really, really good. You know, come on in. And the round table, comprised of shining, radiant, equal individuals, lives in us. I mean, it does live in us. So, so we want to, you know, invoke that. And then
if I could add, the myth also is about the wound of the king. The king is dying and wounded. He has a wound in his side that will not heal. And, you know,
right.
As fairy tales go and myths go, the old king must die before the new order can come about. So we have a failing sort of order here that has to die and be transformed. And we sure could use
right.
that.
Right. Yeah, and the land is ill. The king is ill. The land is ill due to the abuse of rank and privilege, and corruption, and inauthenticity. The people are not living their authentic lives. And it's a useful reminder that everybody in the myth or the fairy tale blows it, right? Percival goes to the Grail Castle and he blows it. He forgets to ask the question, like, you know, why are you ill? What grieves you? And he's thrown out and people throw shoes at him and everything. And then he comes back. So we all blow it, right? We all blow it. And then, you know, come on back to ask the question. And it's also, what does the Grail serve and how do we serve it? You know, as part of that dynamic, the abundance of life. And so I just want to toss into our listening, our watching, our participatory watching the debate, perhaps, you know, I think it's a good idea, you know, or play some useful soundtrack while watching, you know, but Biden is born with the sun, S-U-N, at the same degree as the Gettysburg Address, which is that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. We go, let's have him remember that tonight. That would be a good one. It's certainly relevant, right? It's because it's on the table, right? So, yeah, we like that. We like that dynamic. So stones, Merlin, you know, mythological literacy, you know, And we'd spoken about, you know, to spiral out of polarity, and I bring up, I'm going to forget the name of the person who brought it up, but a learned druid who says, John Michael Greer, who says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get heat. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. So it's not to ignore the danger at all, right? But it's like spiral out of the thing. And that gets us to, well, we're going to honor the shadow, right? We were talking, and let's bring it forth, you know, about America's shadow. And my take on it is that America's shadow is that it has been unable to distinguish between the con man, Herman Melville wrote a novel about that, between the con man and the liberating trickster. And I always reference the Remarkable Mr. Ripley, a movie I find infinitely annoying, because the French film on which it was a remake is much better. And in the French film, the con man, in this perfect symmetry of comeuppance, is revealed. You know, it's like, oh, in the American version, the con man gets away with it and continues killing people, right? So we want to be in story rewrite, don't you think?
Yes, I mean, there's an idea from Thomas Singer, who's a Jungian analyst, about the collective complex. You know, what's the collective complex of America, the shadow complex of America? The idea, of course, of the shadow is the rejected elements or the part that is unconscious. Yeah, so in this way, they're certainly unconscious of how much there's a con man or snake oil salesman or advertising or celebrities there. You know, that's part of the. I mean, there are many other, you know, the racial inequity is a cultural complex. The degradation of the environment is missed by many, many people. So, yes, there was a book in 58, The Ugly American, which is about the inability of America to recognize Eternity, a movie with Marlon Brando, which was kind of not well rated, but it's about, you know, about America's inability to recognize cultural differences. You know, we certainly have the arrogance of America is pretty, you know, overwhelming. And this is all, but you know, America tends to think we're number one. You know, we're the best. We're the superpower here. And this is how Trump is both a reflection of, you know, his narcissism is a reflection of his own ego. Like, I'm number one. I'm the best. I'm the stable genius. And America's obsession with, you know, we're the best. We're arrogant. We're the only one. So the Trump shadow and the shadow of America come together here.
Right. In horrific animation, it's like, well, now what is usually hidden is completely bloviatingly revealed. I'll take it on over here. You know, Biden's shadow, America's shadow, Trump is shadow, or whatever he's possessed by. And that includes Steve Bannon, who's reporting to prison on July 1st. I think that's great. And I like us all visualizing that would be the day when Leonard Peltier emerges, if the parole board has the spiritual compassion and common sense to release him. That's, you know, so the underworld releases a magnificent complex being and inhales this riffraff known as Bannon, but it's a little dozy do. So Steve Bannon, remember, is a trained black magician. He's read more books on the occult than anybody, than me, than anybody. And he's gifted in the manipulation of symbols. And he's gotten completely unhinged, like, oh my God, and we hate to think what he's going to do in 4 months in prison, but, you know, calling for violence. And, well, he's been doing that a long time with Trump.
Yeah, so he must have studied Machiavelli then, of it's better to rule by fear than love. I mean, this is partly the whole, you know, this is the whole fear thing going on. That's the biggest part of the Trump message is fear. You know, if people are afraid, they want a dictator.
Right, fear and chaos, which has always also been a CIA technique to overthrow the democratically elected government of Iran or anything like, you know, it was cheap at the time, you know, when Kermit Roosevelt, you know, second attempt, you know, overthrew Mossadegh and installed the Shah. But it just took a couple $1,000s of hiring toughs to go through the streets, beating people up and beating up the press, you know, and that did it. But it's the same idea.
So you know, America did this? America, the land of the free? And wow.
Yes. This is really important. I see. America's shadow, you know, and again, it's time to really address that. And part of that also is you know, AIPAC, and how controlling it is. I am saddened by the defeat of Jamar. In New York, AIPAC spent $13,000 an hour, $20 million to defeat him in the primary. I'm sad at that, but it's very powerful. But so there's a shadow there, you know, about insourcing democracy back, and our powers of imagination. And then, you know, yes, well, Trump is the embodiment of shadow. And then we'll honor Biden's shadow and the U.S. shadow and everything. But I do want to, something for everyone to know, because, I mean, Biden's shadow is, you know, his capacity for grieving, yes, and then the huge moral lapse of his complicity in the carnage in Gaza. And that could cost him the election, you know, but here, O team, what everyone must know, even though appalled and horrified by Gaza, and we shall see what's possible, but Project 25, delving, it behooves us all as citizens. What is it? What is a participatory citizen? And it's a 990-page document. Trump has never had a platform, right, in the previous two elections. This is his platform. And it's laid out in 990 pages, and we're posting the full thing if you want. But my great ally and frequent radio guest, Michael Stocker, has distilled it. So here it is. If you take all of the palaver about the radical socialist left out of the text, you realize that they are dismantling the administrative state is merely eliminating all regulatory agencies and giving free rein to corporations so they can pillage without any legal constraints, replacing career policy administrators with executive branch loyalists, eliminating the Department of Education and the EPA, handing the keys of the Department of Justice to the executive branch, and essentially allowing the president to use the full faith and credit of the American enterprise to exercise his free will. Women will be relegated back to the kitchens and pantries of the American home. Abortion regulation is mentioned 200 times. It's a blueprint for totalitarian fascism. It's 990 pages, but you can dig into it here. It goes on and on, you know, and it's like they're proud of it, and it should give us conniption fits, which we metabolize into focus and action. So it's like, whew. But that's something for everyone to know. Let's see Biden bringing it up tonight, you know, the Biden part of our collective team, in whatever way. And let's see, my notes are fantastic from our conversation, but scattered all over the place in a fun way. So
if I can add here, that, you know, the biggest single factor predictor of Trump's election in 2016 was the tendency towards authoritarianism in the personality. The people who lean towards authoritarianism were about 40, you know, it's about 40% of the populace. They were, you know, that was the biggest predictor of the people that would vote for Trump. The problem I have above all is how can anyone not see the con? Who are these people? How can people be fooled so much by this guy? You know, that's what's so, I mean, I understand that there are narcissistic people out there, and Trump is certainly high there, sort of a malignant narcissist. So that's sort of, I mean, that's part of the human race. But it's so many people in the United States think that this guy is so wonderful, that's really what's disturbing to me. How people can be so fooled or so interested in power rather than, you know, kindness. I mean, it's really, that's disturbing.
Right. Well, bamboozlement. We want to, you know, on the other side of our break, we want to honor bamboozlement. And I guess in a kind of Jungian sense, you know, Trump has become adept at being a screen for a day, meaning people just project, like, oh, he's so honest. Oh, he says what he... It's like, it's like that charisma. And I suppose, I think, you know, again, we have different styles and everything is welcome. I think it would be useful to wish that, you know, Trump just reveals himself fully in a wandering around, cruel, toxic way. And I would wish for Biden to have his Celtic ancestors and Abe Lincoln and Merlin, you know, behind him going, we want the unifying story, Joe. We want stable coherence and the invitation to, here's what we can do. Yeah, we just want to see that thing. And because we're in the dream news for fun, we can play backstage. You know, I would like Trump to go, you know, I've never liked this job anyway, and I'm tired, and I'm walking off stage. Goodbye. Anyway, so just a repertoire of possible forms, you know, and just to remind our team, you know, we are doing, you know, aspiring playing in the realm of Astro-Jungian pre-debate mythic news radio with our great ally, Steve Parker, who is a forensic psychologist. I want to come back to that on the other side of the break. Forensic psychologist. And I said that reminds me of one of my favorite humans, who is a forensic psychiatrist. And her task is to go into crime scenes to maintain kinship with the perpetrator. And that's, I think, what we're going to try to do, in a way, on the other side of the break, because she said, there is no personal crime, it's all collective dream. You know, she goes, children killing their mother, we are killing our mother, right? It's all kind of related. So this is our show. We'll be unfurling many things as we come to them on the other side of the break. But for our break, we have Prayer to the Earth. It's Ishmael Reed. It's Taj Mahal. It's produced by Kip Hanrahan, who I just remembered as a neighbor. I should look him up. So here is our break prayer, and we'll be right back after this.
If global trends continue, we will be separated from our huge waistlines, our plasma TVs and cell phones, our oversized vehicles growing ever larger so that one day each American will own a bus. Earth, you are our first class berth in space. You are the stomping ground of the human race. Designer of Dorothy Dandridge's face, of the black beaches of Hilo, of the clay that made Venus de Milo. Thank you for the caps of Mount Tacoma, for scallops and the Alps, for George Clinton's funk, for Thelonious Monk, for trumpets and trombones, for Polonaises, blues, and sonatas, for the Alhambra of Granada, for the bronze of Benin, for the marketplace at Barcelona, for the evidence of things unseen, for Zimbabwe and dolphins at play, for Accra, Abuja, and Mandalay Bay. We thank you for Carmen McRae, and for El Greco of Toledo, for the cathedral at Cairn, for Dambala, Krishna, and Vishnu. Earth, you have blessed us, and now we must wish you well and send you on your journey with or without us. May you be shamrock green again. May you stay out of the way of black holes. May that asteroid 3 miles across that's supposed to hit within 10 million years avoid you at the last minute, just like in the movies. May you survive the nuclear deals. May you survive the chemical spills. May you survive the biotechnology. May you survive the Peckerwood theology. May the Big Crunch theory be all wet. May you spin forever without end. May you survive man, who is full of such promise. Sly and the Family Stone were right that everybody is a star who is composed of the same minerals as a planet, including nitrogen and iron. But we often behave like so much hot air. Earth, will you bear us much longer, or will you continue to give us something to stand on?
That's Ishmael Reed, produced by Kip Hanrahan, Prayer to the Earth. It is perfect for us to hold in our hearts as we approach. Many of us will be watching from our underground labyrinth bunkers or whatever the debate tonight, wishing it well. Our guest for this hour is Steve Parker. He is many things. He is a forensic, clinical, and cardiac psychologist. I love that. So your forensic psychology self, how do you approach? Well, we're all confounded by how many people could be bamboozled by Trump, and then there's a Biden complex thing too. It's a cult, right? And you can't talk anybody out of a cult. Is that your experience?
Well, that's true. I guess you have to kidnap people out of cults, that would be tough to do. You know, so part of my job for 30 years. Go ahead. So as a forensic psychologist, part of my job for 30 years was to testify in court, to see people in the hospital, whether they met the statute for mental illness or not, whether they were, you know, how crazy they were, and whether they need to be, you know, whether they could be legally committed to the hospital for 3 days, and or 30 days. They're committed for 3 days involuntarily, and whether they could be committed for 30 more. Very difficult placed. You know, the people were fine. The treatment wasn't very good, and the courts were difficult. So I must say, I've been thinking about, so part of this, for 30 years, I wrestled with, is this person mentally ill? Is this person, how competent is this person? So if I can read the definition of mental illness by Alaska statute, which I had to recite every time, okay. Mental illness means an organic mental or emotional impairment that has substantial adverse effects on an individual's ability to exercise conscious control of the individual's actions or ability to perceive reality or to reason or understand. I mean, that applies to all of us at one level, but, we're in a crazy time, and there's a whole thing of what reality is now. And so, my sense is that this, Trump embodies someone who, in fact, does not have he's not conscious. That's part of the whole thing, is acting very much out of his unconscious, very much out of his shadow. And, by statute, he's a danger to other people. So theoretically, he meets the definition here, because the issue is one of imminence. How imminent is the danger? That we're, there's a whole series of books and articles on the clear and present danger that Trump presents. So,
right. Well, he does get sentenced on July 11th, and maybe for 30 days in a mental ward would be appropriate. We can only see. Remember when Hercules is behaving badly, laying waste to the earth and everything, the gods get together and they sentence him to go to the underworld to learn knitting and weaving. And I think that's a great image, right? We want to see Bannon and Trump and whatever, just knitting tea cozies in the underworld. See, it's not punitive.
Yeah, I heard someone suggested that, the jail sentence probably would be too much for many reasons, but he should be set to pick up trash along the highway. This would be, sort of shameful and embarrassing for him, but some kind of appropriate punishment.
Well, right, knitting and weaving. Well, and again, just, since we're playing, 6 feet down in a labyrinth, with, I like, and no Wi-Fi, no computer, no phone, a plate of psilocybe mushrooms, perhaps. And a deep retreat. But, knitting tea cozies would be good. Or, when we think about the toxic,
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it's part of the feminine, but that's a feminine task. And I mean, certainly what Trump is missing is not female in a gender sense, but the feminine in a archetypal sense, the sense of, that sense of caretaking and weaving and fate and so on. He's really missing that.
Right.
He's missing concern for other people.
That's the mythological genius of the myth of Hercules is uninitiated Mars at that point in the story, just flailing and destroying. And so it's like, we're going to teach, you must go and learn to knit and weave back the fabric of creation that you have sundered, right? And exactly as you say, to kind of fill in this crucial missing dynamic. And we go, all right, so we've got a labyrinth, we've got a thing, we've got wishes. You had said, and we keep it, but it, the way back in your family's history, there is the name Augur, right?
Yeah, so yes, I've always liked that name. With my maternal side. So.
Yeah, I love that, and because, and I said, did you know that the word inaugurate comes from the augur, and here you are, having an affinity with the augur. And the augur is the diviner within all of us, take a walk in nature before the debate or after as a palate cleanser. The augur would go out into nature and read her patterns, possibly with a small microdose.
And this was the origin of the Merlin myth, too. He was based on a character who witnessed too much war and too much killing in the 6th century and was, went to the woods and, babbling, but learned to listen to nature and the animals talking. And so he came back with prophecy. So yeah, going to nature.
That's great. And that's also in there are very few novels about the initiation of the young wizard, but The Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula Gwynne is pretty good. And when the young lad in his immaturity has been provoked into a dharma combat and let great, vast, dark evil into the world, and he's pursued and he goes back to his original mentor who does not scold him but says, you must reverse this, and we're going to talk about reversal and water and turning enemies into allies and things, or we hope we are. You must reverse this, but first go back to the water that gave you your true name. We can all do this. And as you gaze at the water, do not be the stick swirled in the water. Become the stream itself. And then you may go out and write the world. And it's very Jungian. He's got to integrate his own darkness kind of thing, you know. But yeah, no, the water, the well at Glastonbury, all of these things, you know, again, these are all things to kind of bring with us. There's, you know, everything real also has a mythic component to it. You know, and the toxic mimic of community is a cult, and one can't talk anybody out of a cult, as we said. But I think we can do backstage magic just for the fun of it. I like, you know, because it's the same thing. Like, I had to say, what was responsible for the yoga and astrology and spiritual communities being overrun by QAnon? I mean, it was a phenomenon. And for me, it's like dogma. Once you derive status from something you haven't earned, you're open to possession. And I like the all-purpose, it's how I back out of, you know, talking across borders when it's gotten a little sticky. I go, may we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed, right? And everybody likes that, right? It's a good way to back out. And I would think atmospherically, you know, I'm going to light candles and, you know, put on music behind the debate and everything. I think it's a good, may we all awaken tonight, you know, self-possessed. You know, what is it to be a participatory citizen? And this does require, you know, nuance and complexity. Again, people are, you know, many of these dedicated teammate listeners are, you know, appalled at Biden's Gaza policy. And it's like, right, but let that not allow us to contribute to the death of the earth, because that's what's on the table. If Project 25, which, right. Because it's not just Trump, right? Trump by himself is, you know, can't put anything together. It's what is now behind him,
right?
You know, yeah. it's a huge force, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it in our previous conversation. We talked about a unifying symbol. You know, what yes. comes out when you have two forces? You know, like Republican, Democrat, or Biden, Trump. You know, what comes out of the sort of conflict of the opposites, and certainly the debates bringing that together, you know, that's often sort of a third healing transcendent function here. And the image that came to mind we talked about was the image of the Earth from the moon, from outer space. You know, I think Mitchell saw that, you know, the idea of a fragile, blue, beautiful jewel planet from the moon. And that's, to me, you know, a unifying symbol and where we need to get, because indeed the destruction of the Earth is the biggest crisis of all. And that's the arrogance of the male patriarchal viewpoint right now, somehow that it's man against nature, that nature is something you take from rather than you work with, that you're part of, the ecological framework. You know, based on years... go ahead.
No, sorry. No, you finished your thought. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. Well, when I was in college, you know, Gregory Bateson's one of the big people we read in college, and he wrote a book called Steps to an Ecology of Mind. And he was one of the early ecologists and things. And he said our viewpoint of the world was an epistemological pathology. That the way we saw the world as individuals, that we were all separate individual units, was a pathology. And he didn't know how to get past that. He didn't know how to see things ecologically, because he saw, you know, we all see things as separate objects. But the reality is we are all in this together. And the inability to recognize that is part of what the crisis is.
Yes, and the astronaut who, I've forgotten his name, I apologize, but who took that photo has just died, right? So he's now an ancestor, you know, come in. But yeah, that photo of the Earth, the unified, we're all in this thing together, and just in the sake of, whimsy, imagination backstage, you know, I'd like, you know, in another world, you know, that Biden would go, you know, in fact, my dream is that the Earth would have no borders at all. Right, that it was just there, and then in a related way, it would be a Hail Mary pass. But you know, Netanyahu has been invited to address the right wing cuckoo, crazy dementor Congress, and I think it would be a good do-si-do if Biden, he is a Scorpio after all, went to address the Knesset at the same time. It's like mutual reception. You're here, I'm going nowhere, and spoke deeply to the soul of Israel, you know, about what's what and how, what real safety is. It would be bold and impossible, but we're looking at just necessary miracles, just opening portals for, you know, whatever could happen. Transcending polarity. You know, how can we do such things? And then, so do you have a desirable wish or vision of... Yes, you can fill in the last word.
Well, I hope he tells stories. I mean, I think stories, as you know, I mean, stories are what gets through to people. You know, I hope he's coherent and he's a very empathetic, compassionate guy, and I hope that comes through, because that's what, in some ways, what his saving grace is, and I think that's what people can respond to, that he really does have a sense of compassion. He's been through so much, and I think Trump is, you know, my, I guess, bad evil hope is that Trump is, you know, I think he's getting more and more incoherent, and I hope that his incoherence gets amplified by it. And I suspect it probably will some as it goes on, because he's used to audiences, and there's nobody there to say yay, Donald.
Right.
He's going to sort of Trump, you know, have to just talk on his own, and I think by the end of it, he'll probably be rambling. So that's my hope. Though,
well,
it probably won't change votes, but you know, I hope it amplifies what the characters are.
Well, may everything truly be revealed, right? You know, as it is, and I have for years referred to him as Trumpelstiltskin, and in the fairy tale, I think Trumpelstiltskin gets so piqued. I have friends who are going to correct me that he stamps his foot and plunges into the underworld, and it's like, oh, that'd be good.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
We'll have to weave down there. Yeah, no, I think that's the way.
And then, weaving, and here's a plate of psilocybe mushrooms, and you know, no more McDonald's.
The other tale that fits here is the emperor has no clothes. I mean, that's really, when I asked on the Junkern site, you know, what's the myth of Donald Trump? And this is years ago. More than anything else, people said it's the story of the emperor has no clothes. I mean, here's this guy. You know, everyone's pretending he's royalty or something, but he really has nothing, and how people are conned by this. You know, it's really a story about being conned, and it's a child part within that sees it and that speaks it. So somehow it's this child part that's going to speak, that may be the saving grace here.
Right, and then the deeper. Or equally deep, the shadow, who knows what darkness lurks in the hearts of men, the shadow knows, great radio show. That dementors are always and only self-referential, right? So whatever Trump says, he's only talking about himself, you know, and we go, may it just go back, you know. So Biden's going to be jacked up. He wants a shot in his butt. And it's like, oh, so Trump really wants a shot in his butt. And we go, so whatever meds, you know, may the truth be revealed. I mean, about everything, everyone. I mean, that's, you know, why not? May it become visible. But it's a crime scene. It's right up your alley, right? I mean, really, the debate and the everything, the campaign is really a crime scene. May we all awaken self-possessed rather than merely possessed, I think is good, going, we see, you know, and I like, you know, just the backstage dissolving of whatever in the American psyche has lended itself to delusional cults, you know, may that dissolve. And then just briefly, I like everything from biomimicry, you know, honey badgers and possums have evolved so that they are immune to cobra venom. And cobra venom is a marvel of symmetry, kind of like COVID. It locks right into mammalian breathing. But honey badgers and possums have evolved so that they have shrunk their receptors, so the receptor of poison no longer fits, and so they eat snakes, right? So I just like this as in the engaged psyche of experimenting with participatory images, you know, may we all see the receptors to tyranny and cruelty and cult-like behavior shrinking in the citizenship realm, as though we were honey badgers and possums, so that tyranny, cruelty, you know, no longer fits. Anyway, I'm just putting that out there as one way to dissolve the power of the cult. So there's that. And then...
Another way to look at it from, say, the view of the collective unconscious, and Trump is kind of a figure from the collective unconscious that needs to be dealt with. In the same way that, you know, COVID was a virus, you know, we all, in some ways, we got healthier fighting. You know, if we can understand the shadow, we can understand the mechanisms that work, that create the virus, we can be healthier. So in some ways, Trump is a virus that if the response is correct, that we will be healthier for it. I mean, that's part of the role of the trickster. So maybe, you know, if we can see what the shadow is, then, you know, the response to it can be a healing one.
Yeah, well, right, and then we're crafting our dedicated alchemical container. I do love, as my listeners know, that the word vessel in all languages means container and boat. So we craft our container, our alchemical container, as you often do, and then we get in it and set sail. I'm aware in the collective team that people are like, oh, Biden and Gaza. I mean, I know. We've got to deal with that. But fate of the earth as well. You know, and what would we see? How could there be a resolution? How could there even be a resolution before the Democratic convention in August in Chicago, of all 1970 resident places? Many things, but I would just say, you know, it's like when Pat Ewing and I decided a year ago to help Biden get, you know, Build Back Better and the climate policy passed, which is a very great piece of legislation, team. It is a, you know, the nuance, complexity, Gaza, terrible, this good. We imagined a pewter shield of self-possession around Biden so that he could do what good is there and address this, you know, and long before the Democratic convention, like, you know, tomorrow, insist on ceasefire. Just necessary miracles. But it is a powerful mythological chart tonight. You know, it is a moon, Saturn, Neptune conjunction in Pisces, the realm of the power of symbols. There we go. You know, and it says dedication, you know, all of our dedication, you know, to having, you know, wise governance, to being responsible citizens, you know, to have the, you know, anything that has moved humans to participatory goodness be brought alive again. And Jupiter's image is, tonight, is aroused strikers surround a factory. Biden is a good union guy, and it's like, let's bring that up too. You know, and it's an all water chart. I mean, I know, you know, astrology not your language, but if I pitch it to you, Steve Parker, that it's all water tonight, right? It's six planets in water. Woo. What would that suggest to you?
Yeah, well, water is water is the symbol par excellence of the unconscious. So it's all about the unconscious elements that are manifesting themselves. And that's part of the conjunction here, I think.
Yeah, right. Well, it is. It's like it's water and the waters of life and the crisis and so you know.
Right. In my limited understanding of astrology, part of, you know, in Aquarius, we're all, you know, it's the water bearer. So as the Jungian interpretation of it is that we all need to bear consciousness in the next Aquarius. It's a bearing of the water of life, and this is what the next stage is.
Yes, close enough for mythological work. Aquarius is an air sign, but it is the woman pouring forth the water, and the water at that time was the closest image for electrical communication. It's what we're doing now. And it's like, may there be, you know, collective story, may there be an invitation to a guiding story of sane, reverent competence that invites everyone. You know, we need the awakened imagination of everybody, right-wing golfers, inner-city kids. You know, we have this, and we can't afford the ridiculous blood sacrifice of war. We got stuff to do. So we just sort of see that hovering behind him. But it is very Celtic, and I just wanted to put out, may Biden's ancestral Celtic spirits, you know, support his capacity for spiraling forth the desirable invitational narrative, you know, and again, remind him of the Gettysburg Address. that we might change slightly, government of the people, for the people, by the people, shall not perish from the earth. We might say government of the earth, for the earth, by the earth, just backstage slipping that in there, and addressing the danger and the crisis. And when on rare occasions I've done mainstream TV, I would always do a backstage prayer, like, let me answer the questions I wish they'd asked and not be seduced into entanglement. And I think that's a good one to do, right? Self-possessed, unprovocable, he's got a job to do. There's ancestors behind him. That which is even better than Joe Biden, the Irish are willing to forgive him, perhaps, if tap on in here, to his own. And to be surprising, let's see him giving voice to the earth climate crisis and ingenious solutions. It's going to get tricky. Well, there's many things we can do a post event too, Steve. It's going to get tricky when they talk about, the border, and that's where Biden's been teased into.
Right. And if I could briefly comment here about the whole border thing, the idea of the shadow is it's an attempt to keep we try to keep the repressed elements out, the rejected elements are not part of us. So Trump's whole thing about this putting a wall on the border is about keeping, it's a projection of the personality, about keeping the unwanted, rejected parts of himself and building a wall about it. And it's just this, it's the inner meant to be starting this outer thing. And so this is a very, I would hope that one of the reporters asked something about projection and shadow tonight. Yes. Donald, do you have a sense of what projection is?
Right, rather than odious Jake Tapper, you should be the moderator. I want a Jungian forensic psychologist being the moderator. Going, it's clear you haven't worked it out with your father. Now, what about that America, in fact, has got big father issues, and we keep outsourcing our authority to incompetent leaders. Yeah. And what do you say about that, Dad? Would be good.
They should ask Trump what his shadow is. Hey, Trump. Hey, Donald. What do you think your shadow is? I mean, this is true in Jungian. You ask that in Jungian therapy all the time. Hey, what's your shadow, Jack? So, hey, Donald. What do you think your shadow is?
Well, it might be such a startling. It might be such a startling question. We're too soon out of time. That it was like what? It would be like the Zen koan going, the dragon has already gone downtown. To disrupt the narrative. Anyway, thank you so much, Steve Parker, for jaunty cahooting about deep things. Wonderful. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. Wonderful board up. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. You can find Visionary Activist Show on Patreon and CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Thank you, team. Woof. Get it.